The fact that this has gotten resolved relatively quickly, I think that's very healthy.
South Korea and the United States have a new security agreement. It's Tuesday, February 12th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Hello and welcome. You'll find us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, U.S. troops stay in Afghanistan for now. Australia powers ahead on clean energy, saving Myanmar's dolphins, ending a dangerous ritual, and new flexible solar panels. It's all on today's VOA Asia. South Korea and the United States struck a new deal Sunday that increases Seoul's contribution for the cost of American military presence on its soil, overcoming previous failed negotiations that caused worries about their decades-long alliance. The development comes as President Donald Trump is set to hold his second summit with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un in Vietnam later this month. South Korea last year provided about $830 million. That covered roughly 40% of the cost of the deployment of 28,500 U.S. troops whose presence is meant to deter aggression from North Korea. Trump has pushed for South Korea to pay more. On Sunday, chief negotiators from the two countries signed a new cost-sharing plan. Seoul's foreign ministry said in a statement that South Korea will pay about $924 million this year. Unlike the previous agreement, the new plan is for 1 year only. Bruce Bennett is a senior international defense researcher at the RAND Corporation. From U.S. Camp Humphrey in South Korea, he tells VOA Asia's Ira Melman that the agreement was a necessity.
Well, I think it was very important to conclude it as rapidly as possible. The growing debate over the so-called burden-sharing amount was causing a fair amount of concern in Korea about whether the United States would pull troops out or do other things that would not be good for the alliance. So the fact that this has gotten resolved relatively quickly after the commitment for the summit meeting with Kim Jong-un, I think that's very healthy. And unfortunately, we're going to be back to the bargaining table very soon.
Now, does that open a deal, one might say, between Trump and Kim when they meet in Hanoi?
Well, I certainly hope not. I mean, one of Kim's objectives forever has been to get U.S. troops off the peninsula and thereby to either significantly undermine or, at an extreme, to destroy the U.S.-South Korean alliance. He wants that because that's how he sees getting to his future. And so we don't want to have that kind of friction develop where a U.S. troop withdrawal and a break of the alliance could develop. It could be very, very bad for regional security.
But in your estimation, does the deal-making mind of the President of the United States still possibly have that in the back of his mind?
Well, it's certainly possible. I mean, we don't know what exactly President Trump is thinking. The thing, though, that needs to be emphasized here is while the South Korean National Assembly's got to approve this deal, they aren't going to increase the defense budget to pay the extra amount of money. The bottom line is that's going to have to come out of something in a fixed defense budget. And currently, when the South Korea's had to make an adjustment in the defense budget, what they've done is take it out of equipment acquisition. That means American businesses will most likely suffer the loss of this money transfer to go directly to the U.S. government. This will likely cost U.S. jobs.
Well, what overall, I don't know how long you've been in Korea now, but can you ascertain what the feeling of the Korean public is about this?
I've just been in Korea just under 1 day. So my sense, though, from media depictions and from other things, people are glad this debate is over. They wanted it to not be a big issue. They wanted to make sure that this was not going to hurt the alliance. And so I think people are going to be very happy, but worried still about the future.
Do you expect this to have any effect whatsoever on the upcoming summit meeting?
Well, I think Kim Jong-un's going to be disappointed. He was very hopeful that this split in perspectives was going to really injure the alliance. So I think he's going to be disappointed that the U.S. and South Korea were able to compromise and put the importance of the alliance ahead of this monetary issue. I think he's still going to likely press President Trump to withdraw some number of American troops in exchange for something on his side. The problem we face, though, now is Kim keeps asking for compensating measures, for corresponding measures. Right now, Kim is building more nuclear weapons and more ballistic missiles. Corresponding measures would be enhanced sanctions and added information operations against North Korea. We're not at a stage to relax sanctions yet, not until North Korea stops its Cold War against the United States and behaves more responsibly. So President Trump's got a big job ahead of him at the end of February.
Do you think that the meeting is advisable?
Oh, I think it's advisable. I mean, the president, when you deal with people in Asia, there are two dimensions of any negotiation. The first is the personal dimension. And President Trump had good results on the personal dimension with the first summit and since then, but he's got to re-energize that. So that's important. The second dimension is the substance. And that's where we're not sure whether Kim is prepared to give anything. If he's not, then there may not be a whole lot of reason for further negotiation and further interaction. The U.S. may just need to turn up the pressure. So this is a difficult time in terms of trying to see both what Kim Jong-un is going to do and what President Trump is going to do.
Bruce Bennett is an international defense researcher at the RAND Corporation. He was speaking with VOA Asia's Ira Melman. These are among some of the top Asia stories you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. China upbeat on U.S. trade talks, but South China Sea tensions weigh. China says U.S. aims to stir up trouble with naval sail-by. American priest in East Timor embroiled in abuse scandal. Huawei global business model relied on bribes and corruption. Bahrain refugee soccer player leaves Thailand. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and a whole lot more when you visit Facebook at VOA Asia and our website, that's voanews.com. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. The acting U.S. Secretary of Defense has made an unannounced visit to Afghanistan, where he says he has not received orders to withdraw American troops. The visit comes as the U.S. continues peace negotiations with the Taliban to end nearly two decades of war there. We hear more from VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb.
Acting Defense Secretary Patrick Shanahan told reporters before his unannounced stop in Kabul, the United States is not discussing any size troop withdrawal.
I have not been directed to step down our forces in Afghanistan. The direction, and this is in close coordination with Secretary Pompeo and Ambassador Bolton, is to support Ambassador Khalilzad and these peace negotiations.
Last week, during the State of the Union address, President Donald Trump slammed U.S. involvement in prolonged conflicts.
Great nations do not fight endless wars.
He also praised peace talks with the Taliban, seeing them as a way to bring American troops home from Afghanistan.
As we make progress in these negotiations, we will be able to reduce our troops' presence and focus on counterterrorism, and we will indeed focus on counterterrorism. We do not know whether we'll achieve an agreement, but we do know that after two decades of war, the hour has come to at least try for peace.
Shanahan said Monday the United States would determine the size of its troop presence in Afghanistan in a coordinated and disciplined manner. He added that the presence would continue to defend the American homeland while supporting regional stability.
The U.S. has significant investment in ensuring security. But the Afghans decide their future.
Afghan President Ashraf Ghani's government has not participated in ongoing talks between U.S. envoy Zalmay Khalilzad and the Taliban. Khalilzad and his team are due to meet with the Taliban again February 25th in Qatar. Carla Babb, VOA News, The Pentagon.
Happening now in Asia, Thailand's election commission has formally disqualified Princess Ubulratana Mahidol from running for prime minister for a party linked to ousted Prime Minister Thaksin Shinawat. Earlier, her younger brother, the King of Thailand, issued a statement barring her candidacy. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad you're with us today on VOA Asia. Australia is installing renewable energy facilities at a faster rate than any other country. Research shows Australia is on track to meet its Paris climate commitments 5 years earlier than expected in the year 2025. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Australia is enjoying a green energy revolution. It's installing renewable energy facilities faster than anywhere else. And research shows Australia is on track to meet its Paris climate commitments 5 years early. The agreement reached in the French capital in 2016 stressed the need for global action to cut greenhouse gas emissions. Academics say at the current rate, Australia can expect to be 100% powered by green sources within a decade and a half. Andrew Blakers is a professor of engineering at the Australian National University.
Currently above 20% renewable electricity. At this rate, we're going to get to 50% in 2024 and 100% in about 2032 if we just keep doing exactly what we're doing now. This is four or five times faster per capita than the United States, China, Japan or the European Union.
The research from the Australian National University contrasts previous studies, which found Australia isn't on track to meet its obligations under the Paris Agreement. The 2018 Emissions Gap Report from the United Nations listed Australia as a G20 country that won't meet its 2030 emission reduction target. There is broad agreement, however, that renewable energy has an increasingly important part to play in Australia. It's a sunny and windy place. It has a range of renewable power sources, including solar, wind, hydro and geothermal energy, which taps heat in the earth. It has a growing rooftop solar industry. At the end of last year, more than 2 million Australian homes had rooftop solar systems. Renewable energy will help to cut emissions in Australia, which still uses coal to generate much of its electricity. Recent extreme conditions in Australia have again focused attention on the impact of climate change. January was the hottest month ever documented, and 2018 was the third warmest year on record. The Bureau of Meteorology says that while it can't attribute individual heat waves to climate change, it states that as the planet warms, bursts of extreme heat will become more frequent and intense. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Coming up, protecting rare dolphins in a busy waterway. You're listening to VOA Asia.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's at voanews.com.
voanews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
The latest news from VOA Asia, some of the world's biggest palm oil users are trying out new satellite technology to monitor deforestation in Southeast Asia as pressure grows on them to source the ingredient responsibly. And users can get detailed imagery within days as opposed to months under the old systems. You'll get the latest news in just minutes by visiting VOA Asia Facebook each day. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, the Irrawaddy dolphins that cruise through their namesake river in Myanmar are an endangered species. The Wildlife Conservation Society says there are only about 76 left in the Irrawaddy River. That number has risen from a low of 69 over the past few years, thanks to conservation societies working alongside local fishermen. VOA's Kevin Enix reports.
Some local fishermen on the Irrawaddy River have been partnering with dolphins all their lives. Mong Lei taps his boat to call the freshwater animals before tossing his nets.
Irrawaddy dolphins really help fishermen in the Delta region. Like a friend helping us fish, we catch more fish with dolphins and we love each other. We work together with understanding.
The dolphins are elusive and these days extremely rare. There are only an estimated 76 still living in this river. Human activities like electric fishing and the use of gill nets until recently were responsible for the dolphins' declining numbers.
The main danger for the Irrawaddy dolphin is electric fishing so far because they are not only getting the fish, sometimes dolphins die accidentally by the shark. And also, even though sometimes dolphins trying to they can escape, they can stay away from the electric fishing, but they are like taking all the food of the dolphin.
Chit Tu Wei works for the Irrawaddy Dolphin Project. His team, government patrols, and local fishermen have recently increased their presence on the river. And that, Wei says, is saving dolphins.
Electric fishermen, whenever they saw the boat like there, they run away. So the amount of electric fishing is also going down a little bit. At the same time, the amount of dolphin is increasing.
Irrawaddy dolphins are also a draw for tourists who have never seen these rare animals. Kay Ong is a tour guide.
I think nowadays, the villagers know more and more because if they don't do protect the Irrawaddy dolphin, the tourists are not care more and more year by year, so they notice so now they protect the dolphin.
And to encourage buy-in from locals, 75% of the money coming in from tourism activities goes back to the local community. It's a unique setup. More dolphins equal more fish, and more dolphins also equal more tourism. It appears to be a win-win, as conservation groups work with local communities to help save endangered species and at-risk habitat. Kevin Enix, VOA News.
This news from VOA Asia. South Korea has signed a new short-term agreement with the United States to boost Seoul's contribution toward the upkeep of troops. Previous such agreements lasted 5 years. The new deal is in effect for only this year and will have to be renegotiated fairly soon. All the big stories come your way throughout the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, the United Nations is highlighting zero tolerance for female genital mutilation, or FGM. In a statement this week, the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres called it an abhorrent human rights violation affecting women and girls around the world. The controversial practice is widespread in parts of Africa, but it also happens here in the United States. Haiti Adams Fitzpatrick tells us FGM has sparked a global clash between those who define it as a cultural tradition and those who say it is a dangerous ritual that should end. But first, a warning. Some may find this content of this report disturbing.
34 years ago in Sierra Leone, F.A. Cole was just 11 years old and had no idea why someone would be putting a razor blade to her genitals. She demonstrates how she was led to a forest, bound and blindfolded.
Two or four of the women held me down. They spread my legs open and pinned me down. And then the woman who was the cutter, she sat on my chest. And so she started to cut my clitoris. I began to fight and scream and wriggle under her, just looking for somebody to help me, somebody to come to my rescue.
Cole recalls days of excruciating pain, followed by years of wondering why.
When I came to America and I started doing research and started talking about my story, that's when I realized the damage, not just the sexual damage, but the psychological damage that was done.
Cole now lives in Washington and campaigns to end female genital mutilation in the U.S. and Africa. Also in Washington is anthropologist Fwambai Amadu. She, too, is from Sierra Leone and says she was circumcised, not mutilated. She was an adult and says it is a rite of passage into womanhood in Kono culture. She believes anti-FGM campaigners are putting African cultures under siege.
The grand narrative of mutilation is not is completely, you know, inappropriate, because most women do not identify with this terminology. They don't understand how their cultures are being represented and women's sexuality is being represented in the media, because that's not how it's lived on the ground.
It's a practice with often serious medical consequences. It has physicians at major U.S. medical centers concerned about whether American doctors are equipped, medically and culturally, to treat women who have been circumcised.
It was my second month of my residency, and I was on my OB rotation, and there was a woman from Djibouti in East Africa who was coming in labor. I called the senior physicians, and they had no idea what was going on. The bottom line is a lot of doctors don't know what to expect, don't know how to manage these types of emergencies.
That experience inspired Dr. Ranit Mashori to teach other doctors about FGM, especially as they treat more immigrants from Africa, Asia, and the Middle East. FGM is now illegal in 22 African countries. A federal ban was overturned recently in U.S. court, but it is still prohibited by state laws in nearly 50% of the country. Hady Adams-Fitzpatrick, VOA News, Washington.
A new type of solar panel is promising a cheap, flexible way to get more power from the sun. They may help the growing renewable energy industry expand even faster. VOA's Steve Barragona illuminates us with more.
Solar power is helping bring about a future of cleaner energy. But there are limits to where rigid solar panels can go. A new kind of flexible solar cell, made with a mineral called perovskite, can go almost anywhere, says physicist Olga Milinkovic.
We can use perovskite cells on the facades of the building, on the roofs of the buildings, on the roofs of the cars, on the electronic devices, small electronic devices. We can use it on the sails. We can use it in the boats, tents, unlimited applications.
Milinkovic says perovskite has become a favorite among solar panel researchers.
The advantage of the perovskite solar cell is that it can be lightweight and flexible, and it can be printed, so it's very cheap. Everyone can use it on every surface.
Milinkovic developed a way to print perovskite panels like an inkjet printer. She co-founded a company to produce them called Solei Technologies, after the Baltic sun goddess. Construction company Skanska is testing the panels at their Warsaw headquarters. Adam Targowski is sustainable development manager for Skanska.
They work perfectly, even when they are not well exposed to sunlight, so we can use them on all facades of the building.
Solei calculates that about 1 square meter of panel can supply a day's worth of power for one worker's computer and lights. And they keep getting better as research continues, says the company's scientific director, Konrad Wojciechowski.
For other technologies, it took decades to really enter into some markets. Perovskite has been around only for a few years in scientific research, so there's still a lot to be done, but potential is basically pretty much unlimited, I think.
There are still durability and other problems to work out, but several companies expect to have perovskite panels on the market this year. Steve Barragona, VOA News.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. Our listeners hear us in so many different ways, including the radio. Many great radio stations throughout Asia carry our program, like Falcon Radio at Adamson University in the Philippines. We thank everyone there who's tuned in today. And no matter how you've listened to us, whether it is on the radio, through the internet, our VOA Asia Facebook page, or our website, voanews.com. We're glad to have you with us. We're also glad to have our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Aidan Utku, our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Anna Cook. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day.